Welcome back to Disney Dependent. I'm Sarah Chilcott.
And I'm a YouTuber that's like making a vlog really in probably the most dangerous area possible. And I'm also people that just combine too many things and come up with a different sport. Woo!
What? I don't know.
We're back!
Yeah, baby! We are.
2024!
Woo! Happy New Year, people!
Happy New Year. Happy New You. We hope that all of your dreams came true in 2023. They didn't.
They didn't.
We all know that.
But we all know this is the year.
This is the year.
This is the one.
How do you guys feel? How do you guys feel about New Year's resolutions?
I think they're dumb.
Ash?
I think they're mostly dumb.
I'm all about like, okay, I have some goals.
Goal setting's different.
Goals are great.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Resolutions are stupid.
Yeah.
I don't like black and white in any world.
Well, it's also don't work. It's unrealistic to pick a day to start your new something.
That's right. Like, if you want to do it now.
If you want to do it, you start it that second.
That second. There is no 2004. That doesn't exist. It's
you
just
can
now.
Also, it can't. I just don't think many things work like that. I think it has to be a realization you come to on your own.
Right. You want to start working out more. That's not going to happen on January 1st.
No. That's why gym memberships sell it crazy in the month of January. And then they just...
They're empty by March.
Yeah.
That's a real thing, too.
It really is. I actually saw a really funny Instagram thing the other day that was like, I want to start a new gym called Resolutions. And then we take in all of the money... from the January subscriptions, memberships, and February 1st, it switches over to a bar called Regrets.
That's great.
I was like, nice. Yeah.
That's funny.
I was at the bar the other day as the bartender, and there was a guy there. We were talking about how many people in our lives are doing dry January.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, January is the worst month to be sober.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I don't want to be sober in January.
Ugh,
I could be sober in May.
Yeah. Right.
May is fine. May is somewhat sunny. There's like, you know, there's prospects of good weather on the way.
Just hold tight.
Right now it's like, no.
No.
I don't have it in me.
Oh my God.
I mean,
it's dark and gray around here.
We'll see what happens here. I mean, I would say.
Are you trying it?
No.
Oh.
God, no.
Gotcha.
But I did make a resolution, but I don't know. It's not really the right word. That
a goal.
My daughter and I both decided that we were going to drink less.
Good.
Yes, now, my daughter and I decided this.
Which daughter?
The oldest.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
No, Kate doesn't drink.
Okay, that would be very interesting.
No, Lauren and I both decided it was like, you know, this can't be good for us.
Sure, it's
not. And the thing is, we have extreme FOMO, the two of us. Mm-hmm. So if we're together with people who are drinking, we are drinking.
That's a
family
trait.
And if someone is like, let's do another round, I'm like, in my head, I'm thinking, that's a bad idea. And then my mouth just goes,
Well, because it's fun. You want to be part of the fun.
Yeah.
I know. I got to tell you, someone that doesn't really drink, you're not missing what you think you are. You can
still...
Oh,
no, I know that.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of me missing out anymore. That's not really how I feel. It's just I don't like to be the one who's like, nah.
I know
we're
it's
gonna
awkward.
Be responsible right now. I'm like, nah.
You wanna
life's
let
short.
It go. Yeah,
YOLO.
Life is short. Right. I know. It's weird. You can think of it both ways. Life is short, so be healthy. Life is short.
You could.
You know, you could.
you could go either way.
You could go either way.
Or you could do like me and do completely opposites all the time, and it'll just balance itself out.
Yes.
There it is.
That's actually, honestly, who I am as a person.
Yep.
Yeah,
I'm one extremes. Or the other.
How would you guys rate the holiday season that we just had?
I think it was by far one of the best that I have personally had.
Ash?
It was great.
Yeah, I'd say it's great. It was a little... We were a little distracted by...
Yeah.
The stuff we have coming up.
Right.
So that was something that was interesting. So I don't feel like I really got to fully unplug and like tap into the full Christmas spirit that I usually can.
I have to be honest, I don't think I ever have since being a kid.
Yeah, I know.
I think I've
every
always
year, it's
been
always surprising.
Very distracted and busy with other things. Yeah. And I always kind of get to the end of December and feel like,
man,
dang it, I missed Christmas. I know. Yeah. But this year, even though I didn't do anything Christmassy, I had Christmas lights and a Christmas tree at home and at work.
Yeah.
And I was just like kind
of around
it.
Did you guys watch any movies?
A few.
Yeah.
I mean, by no means did we watch all of the ones that we usually do, but I feel like...
We always do.
We always do, and I feel like...
You feel good about it.
No.
Oh.
I don't. I'm like, I'm watching the same movie I've seen 15 times. I don't want... I didn't even watch Christmas Vacation this year.
Right.
But...
That's probably the first year that you haven't in probably a long time, I would imagine. Yeah.
But I was busy and our schedules don't really align. And the time we have together to watch something, it's like, do we want to watch something we've seen before? Do we want to try something new?
No, I get it. But that's the thing with Christmas, you get older too. Like, I love it so much. I adore Christmas. By far my favorite time of year. It's not even close. But I do try to be easy on yourself. I think that's a good recommendation to everyone. You know, you set these insane expectations for yourself and you're bound to let yourself down. That's why like depression and stuff is just through the roof during that time.
Well, and I think the same thing for New Year's.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of people have this very high expectation for New Year's
Eve. They've seen too many movies.
They've seen too many movies. They picture themselves in a black glittery dress.
Oh, the acquaintance be forgotten.
Dark and beautiful atmosphere where everyone's super dressed up and they're going to run into the love of their life and have this magical moment. And everyone's going to be counting down together and everyone's going to be so happy and beautiful. The reality is, I got off work at 7 o'clock, got home, took off my pants immediately.
Because that's what you do as an adult.
Drank half a bottle of Pinot Noir, then put on a swimsuit, went to the hot tub, came back, and had another half bottle of champagne. Well, we were trying to find the ball drop thing and realized about 10 minutes in that we were watching fireworks from Paris that was a pre-recorded obviously.
We kind of did the same thing.
And we couldn't find the ball drop, and we were laughing so hard at midnight. It was anything. Like, well, 5, 4, 3. Hey! But, you know, we were cracking up.
At least you stayed up.
Oh, always.
We didn't.
I haven't been asleep before midnight in years at this point, I'm sick.
I always stay up for New Year's Eve, and I just at least go out to the street, and I hear people hit the pots and pans and fireworks and stuff. And Ashley has a very funny tradition where she likes to go to bed especially early that night.
Yeah.
In sort of a fuck you to the whole
tradition. Protest.
Sober if possible, but I wasn't this year.
Well, to be fair, when we were younger, New Year's Eve was an all out fucking bash.
Yeah.
So it was Halloween.
Yep.
But not like in the movie way that you just described.
Right.
I'm talking like suburbs house party.
House party.
Yeah. With 75 idiots.
Jeans, t-shirts, and really bad beer.
Really bad beer. So, well, anyway, we hope that you guys had a good holiday, and we hope that your new year is as good as it could possibly be.
Absolutely.
I hear something.
Oh, shoot. This just in. It's 48 and rain at not Disneyland.
And it's 64 and sunny at Disneyland. It's happened. Right. It switched.
We're getting there.
Hey, we'll be in Long Beach soon.
Shut up.
Yeah.
I'll be in Cancun in a month and a half.
Are you really?
Yeah.
No way.
I'm going to Cancun.
You son of a bitch.
Yep. 6 days.
You and the homeboy?
Yeah. That's Josh and I. 6 nights in an all-inclusive resort in Cancun.
God damn.
We've never done it before.
God damn.
We haven't been on a real vacation, just the two of us, since our honeymoon.
Well, that's a real vacation.
In 1999.
Just all you need to do is chill in the resort.
Yeah.
Got everything you could ever want.
There's tons of stuff right there. So, you know, we can hop on a little boat and go over to, there's an island right there that everybody keeps telling me about, and
the weather's gonna be perfect,
probably, even if it's not.
It's not here.
What are you gonna do?
Whatever.
You'll eat delicious food.
Exactly.
Well, that's great. Good for
you.
All right.
All right, 2023 marked the 100-year anniversary for Warner Brothers. So to celebrate, we're looking back at the fascinating life behind this entertainment powerhouse that gave us the Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings films, Beetlejuice, The Goonies, Batman, Lost Boys, Neverending Story, Gremlins, not to mention many of my all-time favorite films.
Have you heard of any of those?
Nope.
I think not.
Nope. But at its core, this is the story about four brothers. There's Harry, the stoic businessman and proud immigrant. Albert, who largely avoided the public eye, although he served as a loyal ambassador to the family brand. Sam, the technical visionary. And Jack, the youngest brother, the wild child, the entertainer, and the sometimes unpredictable one.
I have never actually thought of Warner Brothers as being people.
Yeah, they're actual brothers.
Brothers.
Immigrants. Yeah.
That's rad.
No, I mean, so pumped for this story.
I might change my mind very soon. I don't know.
I love this stuff so much, as you guys know. I love stories about, for one, old Hollywood.
Yeah.
I love it. And just the entertainment industry at all. And it's just like, it's one of the big American stories in American companies. And anyway, I can't get enough of this stuff. So historically, it's like a pretty significant story.
Yeah. Well, before we talk about the Warners' life in America, let's first don our finest Russian fur caps and take a trip back in time to learn why the Warners and so many other Jewish Hollywood tycoons emigrated from Eastern Europe at the perfect time to completely revolutionize the entertainment industry.
Wow. When is there a time not to?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when has there been a bad time to leave?
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
War-torn areas.
Right. Can you imagine coming from Russia in this time and then coming to sunny Los Angeles?
No.
Probably just a mind fuck.
Yeah.
Well, they had a few steps in between there. So the Warners, an Ashkenazi Jewish family, were really named the Wansels. And preface this, I am trying my best with all of these Yiddish and Russian and Polish words.
Right.
Abraham, forgive me.
you're not fluent in Yiddish?
You know what?
I'm just not.
Yeah. So there were Benjamin, the shoemaker, and his wife, Pearl.
Okay.
They first had two daughters, one dying the same year that their first son, Hirsch, later called Harry in America, was born. He was followed by little brother Aaron, later named Albert in 1884, and Shmuel, later called Sam, in 1887. Family of six were living in a hostile world where, quote, the night riding of Cossacks, the burning of houses, and the raping of women were just part of life's burden for the Jews.
Wow.
Sounds like a
great time.
Really great place to be.
Where in Russia is this?
I'll tell you. So the Warner family actually came from Krasnoszewiec, an area of Poland, just an hour and a half north of Warsaw. Jews began settling the area in the mid-1700s and were the majority by the mid-1800s. But they were living in serfdom, paying rent to live and work on land owned by and controlled by rich counts. So in this system, you don't own your land, you don't own your home, and ownership of everything was largely passed down by bloodlines of the elite.
Right.
So when the reigning Krasinski family couldn't produce an heir in the late 1800s, that added to the constant power plays going on. Not a very stable way to live.
Yeah.
And this is a Polish Congress within the Russian Empire at that time.
Okay.
So to make things more confusing. So the Russian Tsar is the ultimate authority, although this is what we now consider to be just Poland.
Right.
So one group spawned from this period was the Narodnaya Volya, which translates to the People's Will, a revolutionary socialist political org that carried out a series of assassinations on government officials in an attempt to overthrow the autocratic Tsarist system. Which was kind of unfortunate, because Tsar Alexander II was a pretty progressive guy, all things considered. For one thing, he signed the Emancipation Edict in 1861, freeing the serfs. That edict essentially freed over 23 million people who could now enjoy the full rights of citizens, including the right to get married, own property, and own a business. Alexander was also seen as quite tolerant to the Jewish population, which was very different. During his reign, he eliminated special taxes levied on Jews, and he permitted Jews who graduated from secondary school to emigrate to Russia's great cities like Moscow and St. Petersburg. All of that was totally new. He was also overall a pacifist. He was supportive of the United States, abolished corporal punishment, removed a bunch of privileges that only nobility enjoyed, and he boosted the rights of lower class countrymen.
I wonder what that means, though. Like, was he? Because that doesn't mean he's a good guy.
Not necessarily. He's comparatively. No.
Yeah.
Safer.
Somewhat.
Maybe
more
safer.
Human.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, golly gee willikers, you can't please them all, and Lord knows this didn't please them all. Foremost of these dissenters was the People's Will, who proceeded with a series of very public political assassinations. Now, this violence wasn't especially fun for the country by any means, but nothing was really changing in the grand scheme of things, despite their efforts. So in the August of 1879, the 22-member People's Will resolved to assassinate the big guy himself, Tsar Alexander II, hoping it would kick off a revolution. A bloody revolution.
A bloody revolution.
Like the guy at Walgreens.
On a Tuesday.
Yep.
Take it easy, dude.
So over the next year and a half, they made various attempts on Alexander's life, each attempt failing one after another.
Did assassinations just happen constantly back then?
Yeah.
That's just
a whole lot.
That's how it was, right? Cool.
So they stalked him from afar for several months, observed his routines and common pathways to and from the Winter Palace. Their grand plan was to rig explosives underneath the main road that his carriage used, blowing it to smithereens as it passed by.
Damn.
Plan B, in case anything went wrong, or if the entourage happened to take a different way home, they would have four bomb-toting goons loitering at the corners of the street, ready to descend upon the carriage with more explosives if necessary.
It's like cartoon-level
hysterical.
The
backup plans, though. I mean, that's good.
Plan C, if the bomb and goons failed entirely, was further goonery with daggers and pistols.
They wanted this guy dead.
Yes.
Yeah, they had backup plans. That's cool.
So in preparation, the group opened a cheese store right off of the street in question.
That's the best preparation I've ever heard.
Yeah.
A cheese store.
Because they would use one of the back rooms of the store to dig a tunnel into the earth extending into the middle of the street where they would lay large quantities of dynamite.
Damn.
Wow.
Prepared. Also, this is technically Poland still?
Mm-hmm.
Polish cheese?
No, this is in Russia.
Oh, this is more in Russia proper. Okay, yeah. Even better. Russian cheese? I've never heard of it. I don't think that's a thing.
Listeners out there, do you know of any Russian cheeses that James should know about?
Look, am I saying that cheese has never been made in Russia? Obviously not. People have made cheese in Russia.
Well, in Russia, but the cheese you have is Russian cheese. That's it.
Right.
It's not like
that makes it Russian cheese.
Yeah. There is no...
No, I think Russian cheese is the buildup of scum in your old aunt's, you know what I mean? And that's what
my God.
You just slather that on a piece of toast. Mm-hmm. That's the Soviet way. They were poor and they...
This was so far before the Soviet time.
So far before. Well, far, but not so far, all right? Still within the wheelhouse of the cheese. The wheel... Still within the wheel
cheese
of
wheel.
Cheese. The cheese.
Okay.
Look, this is a podcast that matters. Okay. We
I
talk
love
about
that
the
you're
real
putting
issues.
Chapstick on right now. I just put chapstick on.
We're a chapstick and family.
We are addicted.
Yeah.
Now I'm peeling all of my nail polish off.
Yeah.
So on March 13th, 1881, the Tsar traveled in his closed two-seater carriage drawn by a pair of horses, accompanied by six mounted Cossacks, and followed by three sleighs carrying, among others, the chief of police and two officers. So he was well attended to. Mm. Wouldn't you know it, the carriage took an alternate route, foregoing the cheese shop tunnel bomb altogether. So it was left up to the handheld bombs and personal weapons. One member surreptitiously stepped forward with a bomb wrapped in a handkerchief and tossed the bomb right under the Tsar's carriage.
Whoa.
Direct hit, yes. Not so fast. The carriage was bulletproof.
What? That's a thing back then?
Yep. So Alexander was shaken but not stirred. The bomber was immediately...
I see what you did there. The Bond reference. He was shaken, not stirred. That's how he takes his martini.
Yes.
Also, only little bitches take martinis like that. Shaken. It's just a dumb thing to say. Well,
who drinks a stirred martini?
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Like,
what do you mean?
No, I'm saying most martinis
are shaken.
I would imagine
most martinis are stirred.
I disagree.
Shaking a martini in Manhattan is like totally against the rules.
To be fair, I only bartended at a rock venue.
I know. So that's, you poured all a lot of beers did. And shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never stirred a martini in my life. I mean, and I've probably made thousands.
You know what's in a martini?
Thousands of Manhattans. Thousands
vodka, of vodka
and ice.
And you know what has a lot of vodka and ice? Russia. And I'm going to get back to the story.
Okay. I suppose you can.
Final word, okay. James?
No, you're good. Okay. You're good. You're good.
All right. So the bomber was immediately apprehended by police, and the guard quickly decided to get the Tsar back to the palace by sleigh, bulletproof coach having been destroyed in the blast. The Tsar reassured the gathering anxious crowd, "Thank God I'm untouched."
Ah.
He was ready to sleigh away when a second bomber narrowed in and threw a bomb at his feet. A second explosion ripped through the air, uh-oh, and the emperor and his assassin fell to the ground, both mortally injured.
To be assassinated while on a goddamn sleigh?
Yeah.
That's a bummer. That is very just, I don't know, that's silly. That's a silly way to die. Silly,
yeah.
Whee! On a sleigh.
And since the crowd had closed in near the Tsar by this point, the second bomb claimed many more casualties than the first. Oh. Poor Alexander's legs were shattered below the knee, bleeding profusely.
Oh.
His abdomen torn open and his face grotesquely mutilated.
Well, good thing he was in a region and time where there is plenty of medical help for him.
Correct.
Yeah. And care.
And care. Mm-hmm.
A third
Here,
bomb.
Drink this vodka. That is the hospital. To just slap some vodka on your knee, pour it down your throat.
On his bloody stumps.
Give you another fur hat, and that's it.
Put a couple of fur hats on the stumps.
Just there's no stereotypes happening here. Not one.
Stereotypes are there for a goddamn reason.
I know they are.
Look up pictures of Russia.
No.
Anytime.
You are not wrong.
Dude, it's wild.
Yeah.
Well, a third bomber and the crowd stood at the ready, but the deed was done. Mm. The Tsar, still clinging to life, could barely whisper, "Take me to the palace. There I will die." And wow. Die he did.
Ah!
That's Yay!
Some... Boo?
Do you think that, ever... think that actually happened? Do you think that actually happened?
Probably.
I often wonder about things like that. Like,
you know what?
You know what I mean?
Think he's still alive?
No, I mean, they're like, take me to the palace where I don't know.
I know.
There were enough people around. It's probably true.
My guess is going, ah, ow,
ooh.
There's so much blood.
Mama.
Mama. I'm a wee little czar. Me. He was a pretty good leader compared to all of his contemporaries, James.
Whatever. He still ate Russian cheese. That's all I know.
Well, did he? He didn't go to the cheese shop.
He didn't.
Shop.
They went around the cheese shop.
Actively avoided the cheese shop.
Well, Alexander was succeeded by his son, Alexander III, who operated in a very reactionary manner and reversed a whole buttload of the good progress that his father had made in office. And with everything these days, the Jews were blamed for the assassination, so the retaliatory May laws, sold as merely a temporary measure, were passed. Jews were forbidden to move outside of what was called the Pale of Jewish Settlement, which is basically areas designated as okay for Jews to live.
Wow.
They were forbidden to hold mortgages or leases outside of the settlements, banned from doing business on Sundays and other Christian holy days.
And what year are we saying this is now?
It's 18... right afterwards, so it's 1880s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Rough.
In subsequent years, other discriminatory laws were instituted. Quotas were enacted, limiting the number of Jews admitted to high schools and universities. And despite being the majority in many towns, half-empty schools littered the countryside with so many potential students forbidden to enroll in their own schools on the soil of their birth.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lord. This is not like it's rural Indiana or something where there's one Jew. Right. We're talking about Russia.
Yeah.
In the 1800s. That, like you said, it's half Jewish. Mm-hmm. My gosh.
The army's medical unit could be no more than 5% Jewish.
Well, that just makes sense. I mean, sorry to say the worst thing possible. I mean, that just adds up.
And any Jewish lawyer who wished to become a barrister needed the express consent of the Minister of Justice. Not easy to get.
Ashley, what's a barrister? That's a real question. I don't really know what that is.
I don't want to get into it.
It's like a... is it like a
I'm surprised you didn't ask me what a Cossack was earlier.
I am too, actually.
Well, while we're at it.
I don't know what a Cossack is either. I know the word. I've heard
is
it.
Take a stab. Is it a... Not a race, but a type of Russian person? Like a demographic of people?
Cossacks were warrior subjects who provided the czars with mounted troops in exchange for land. So they're hired hands.
Cute.
But there is a racial element to it. I think they're from the Turkey-ish region.
Right.
Don't quote me on that.
I won't.
You better not.
I can't imagine that would come up in any conversation I'm ever going to have.
My wife told me.
And I quote. Like, okay.
By the end of Alex Jr.'s reign, Jews couldn't even sell alcohol. In the spring of 1891, Jews that had previously worked their tuchus off to get to Moscow were deported from the city. So about 20,000 people were deported from the city.
Whoa.
Except for a few deemed, quote, useful enough.
Mm-hmm.
The newly built synagogue was shuttered by the city's authorities. And then in 1892, new measures banned Jewish participation in local elections, despite their large numbers in many towns of the Pale. So the next year brought the law concerning the names, imposing criminal punishment on any Jews who tried to, quote, adopt Christian names, and dictated that Jews must use their birth names at all times.
Wow.
No hiding.
No hiding. Mm-hmm. We need to know who you are. No adapting. I found out what a barrister is, by the way.
What's up?
The definition, it's a noun. A lawyer who is authorized to appear and present cases at any court in a jurisdiction.
Okay. So
that's it.
It's a lawyer.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really fancy word for a lawyer. I mean, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Worst of all were the anti-Jewish riots known as pogroms. Pogrom is a Russian word meaning to wreak havoc, to demolish violently.
Mm.
During these pogroms, thousands of Jewish homes were destroyed. Many families were reduced to poverty, and countless men, women, and children were injured, raped, and killed.
Wow.
The pogroms would start in the cities and progress outward into the countryside and villages. To make matters even worse, Alex Jr. blamed the Jews themselves for the riots and tacitly allowed the pogroms to echo outward across the empire.
Jesus.
And by the way, I keep wanting to read Alex Jr. as Alex Jones.
Yeah.
And it kind of fits anyways. Yeah,
it kind of fits. Yeah. It kind of works. It's making the frogs gay.
What? The globalists.
The globalists.
So these anti-Semitic laws and disgraceful treatment would remain in effect for decades and served as the impetus for mass emigration. Get the fuck out of there.
Right.
From Alexander's assassination in 1881 to 1920, over 2 million Jews pieced the fuck out of the Russian Empire, many landing in the Americas, including our family in question, the Warners.
Okay.
Okay.
So, in 1888, so this is 7 years after the Tsar was assassinated.
Yeah.
In full anti-Jewish pogrom land.
Yeah.
In search of a better future for his family, Benjamin made his way to Hamburg, Germany, and set sail to the United States.
And how old is he here?
Benjamin was 31 when he made his way to Hamburg, Germany, and set sail to the United States. Like so many immigrants, when Ben disembarked at Ellis Island, he took on a more American-sounding name, and Wansel became Werner.
Ah.
He quickly got to work setting up his shoemaking business in this new land, and then sent for the family.
I have a question. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Who decides Werner? Is that his decision? Or is that...
As I understand it from movies I've seen...
It's the Ellis Island.
It would be a list.
Yeah, it would be...
You could just pick from.
You could just say it... Or they could be like, I'm not writing that. You're Smith now.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Crazy.
So Pearl and the four children joined him by steamship to Baltimore less than a year later.
Okay.
In Baltimore, Benjamin struggled to make enough money for the growing family. In their first years in America, Pearl had two more daughters in quick succession. Benjamin, inspired by a friend's enthusiastic advice that he could make an excellent living bartering tin wares with trappers in exchange for furs in Canada, moved the family of now eight to London, Ontario. Over the next 2 years, they had two more sons, Jacob, later called Jack, and David, and the Warners returned to Baltimore, now a family of 10.
Jesus.
And obviously, they had two more children there, Sadie and Milton, becoming a household of 12 members.
Wow. Sheesh. Milton's a great name.
It is a good name.
A few years later, in 1896, the family relocated to Youngstown, Ohio, following the lead of eldest son Harry, who had established a shoe repair shop in the heart of the emerging industrial town. Benjamin worked with Harry in the shoe repair shop until he secured a loan to open a meat counter and grocery store in the city's downtown area. Youngest son Jack would later describe Youngstown in his autobiography as, quote, J. Edgar Hoover told me that Youngstown in these days was one of the toughest cities in America, and a gathering place for Sicilian thugs active in the mafia. There was a murder or two almost every Saturday night in our neighborhood, and knives and brass knuckles were standard equipment for the young hotheads on the prowl.
Cool. Also, I didn't know that Ohio had an Italian mafia history. That's pretty weird.
I believe that. I don't know that I believe that J. Edgar Hoover said that to Jack. And I also don't believe that Jack was aware of that, considering how young he was at this point.
Yeah, that seems insane. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Whatever.
Sure.
Jack claimed that he himself briefly belonged to a street gang in West Lakes Crossing, a notorious neighborhood west of downtown. Meanwhile, he received his first taste of show business, singing in local theaters and partnering with another aspiring song and dance man. During his brief career in vaudeville, he officially changed his name to Jack Leonard Warner. Jack's older brother Sam disapproved of these youthful pursuits. He says, "Get out in front where they pay the actors. That's where the money is."
He's not wrong.
So in 1899, Harry opened a bicycle shop in Youngstown with his brother Albert. Eventually, the two also opened a bowling alley together, which quickly failed and closed.
But they're trying it out.
They're trying
the American dream out.
Harry eventually accepted an offer to become a salesman for a local meat franchise and sold meats in the states of Ohio and Pennsylvania. However, by his 19th birthday, Harry was reduced to living in his parents' crowded household of 12. Trying stuff, failing, learning things.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
Trying it out.
Albert stayed in school longer than any of his three brothers. In 1900, he served as a quarterback for the high school football team. He eventually dropped out and in time got a job in Chicago as a salesman for a soap company. So basically, all of the brothers are going out and trying different vocations.
Right.
Try to make their own American dream happen. Sam had a more interesting career path. He developed a love for the entertainment industry thanks to his early career in the carnival, where he worked as both a snake charmer and a human shield.
What? I can wrap my head around what a snake charmer might be, but what is a human shield?
I think they just accept like hits to their body.
Just stand there and
it's like Jackass before Jackass.
Yeah. That's what I'm picturing.
Huh.
And that was where Sam decided that he was meant for showbiz. And 1903 marked an important transition in the entertainment industry from what was known as a cinema of attraction style, like more spectacle, like very visual, to more narrative storytelling, more engrossing for the audience at the same exact time. And as luck would have it, Sam left his job at the carnival that same exact year as 1903, choosing instead to work at a penny arcade in town where he met a woman who was selling her projector, a Model B kinetoscope. The 16-year-old, who already had a knack for tinkering with gadgets, was immediately drawn to the item, especially after the woman told him she'd throw in a copy of The Great Train Robbery to screen on it.
Oh, wow.
Sam was sold if he could only come up with the $1,000 asking price.
Damn. $1,000 in 1903?
Yeah.
Sheesh.
God, I wonder what that is now. A lot.
Yeah. I could look it up.
Yeah, I want to know.
Yeah, now I need to know.
The calculator for inflation doesn't go back that far, but from 1913, so 10 years later, to now, $1,000 was more like $31,000. So
Jesus Christ.
More than that.
So, yeah. Wow. That's actually less than I thought.
Yeah.
I would think that 1,000 would be
More than that.
More like 100,000.
Yeah, I did too, but still 31. I mean, that's not a small purchase.
No. It's, yeah. It's not what most people have just hanging on their savings account. Right.
For like a sort of a hobby item.
Yeah.
You know, but maybe back then it wasn't really seen as a hobby. It was like you're buying
it. It was a novelty. It was like, holy shit, this lady has a projector and she has a film.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he did come up with the money by enlisting the help of his family. The Warner Brothers pooled together all of the money that they had, but still came up short.
Why? I mean, so it's like, why do they want this so bad? Are they?
He just wants it. He's like...
But not just him, but why do all the brothers, why are they all pitching in money?
Because they're all just trying. They see opportunity everywhere, and they're just trying to find their place in the world.
Gotcha.
Because, I mean, if you have a projector with a movie,
now you can be the show one.
It's a business.
Right. And you can sell it.
It can be a business.
And there's literally no theaters. That's not a thing yet. Like,
yeah. Wow.
So, Benjamin hawked the gold watch that was a family heirloom to raise the final funds needed. Now, with the projector in hand and one movie to play, the Warners constructed a tent in their backyard and opened up their first theater.
Wow. Ah,
inviting neighbors and community members to witness the moving images emanating from Sam's projector.
That's like in Red Dead Redemption 2. They have that in like one of the little, you know, towns. That's like a little shanty town.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
There's a tent that you can go and pay a nickel or whatever.
To see the moving pictures.
Yeah, the moving pictures. And get off your horse.
Well, this makeshift cinema in the backyard of their Youngstown home was short-lived, although not from lack of interest. The cinema was surprisingly successful, but their neighbors grew wary of the crowds and the noise. Mm-hmm. And the brothers wanted a more permanent brick-and-mortar style business anyways. And Sam knew that the carnival was coming to the nearby town of Niles, so they opened a spot in town trying to capitalize on the crowds.
Wow.
Sadly, the Niles Theater ended in disaster after a visit from a safety inspector resulted in a fatal explosion. Mr. Safety Inspector had brought a lit cigar on the inspection of a highly flammable film.
You're kidding me.
Yep.
He's the goddamn reason for it?
Yep.
That's insane. Thanks a lot, safety guy. Yeah, film back then used to be really, really flammable.
Yeah, think about Inglourious Bastards.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But it wasn't a total loss for them. The Warners gathered their equipment and left, and perhaps due to Sam's background as a carnival worker, they were inspired to create a moving cinema, taking their theater on the road and making stops in nearby towns. The Warner Brothers' final stop came in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, where Sam and Albert decided it was finally time to settle down. They convinced their older brother, Harry, to sell his bicycle shop in Youngstown, and then they yet again pooled their money together and bought a building in the city center.
I love that they do things as brothers. That's that's really cool.
Yeah. There, the brothers opened up their first real movie theater in 1905, dubbing it the Cascade Movie Palace. And as grand as that sounds, the inside was a bit of a dank, smelly dump.
I'm sure.
Furthermore, the seating was on loan from a nearby funeral home.
Oh, God.
What? Wow.
Opening weekend for the theater was Memorial Day weekend, and there was a funeral scheduled for that Monday for the local school superintendent. So the funeral parlor needed its seats back, which wasn't going to work for them.
Right.
Desperate to keep their theater running through the holiday, the brothers called the superintendent's widow and promised that if she postponed the service until the next day, her children could see films for free all year long. And she agreed.
It's a good deal, man. There you go.
Before the films would start, Sam opens the show with some informative slides for the audience. Please read the titles to yourself. Loud reading annoys your neighbors. This was followed by, ladies, kindly remove your hats. And gentlemen, please don't spit on the floor.
Oh my goodness.
You gotta say it or else they will.
Yep. When the first reel of the film ended, a slide appeared reading, one moment please, while the operator changes reels.
Adorable.
The Cascade was a success, and perhaps this could be attributed to each of the brothers capitalizing on their respective talents. Harry, the more serious and responsible brother, handled most of the company's business. Sam, the technical one, ran the projector, while Albert, the bookkeeper, and Jack, ever the loudmouth, steered the crowd out of their seats at the end of showings. Within just a few months, the Warners were so successful that they opened up a second cinema in town, the Bijou. Once they saw the success of their two cinemas in Newcastle, they realized that they could make much more money in the film distribution industry. And that's where we'll pick back up next week with the saga of the Warner Brothers.
Wow, we're just getting started.
I absolutely love that the Warner Brothers empire started because these guys were kind of impulsive and bought a projector.
Yeah. Yep. And they're just immigrants. They were just trying.
Yeah.
And they stuck together. They're minority immigrants, you know? And I'm sure everyone can identify with that, especially if you were of immigrant family. Yeah, and it's just a good reminder that like almost everything has a similar story like that.
Right.
Anything that has a big name like Nike or Warner Brothers, Paramount, Disney, you know, as we all love Disney, there's no reality where it like poof, it's just there one day.
It's just crazy people just like going after it.
Yeah. Yep. Just people. It's incredible.
Someone with a dream.
Man, I can't wait until they get to Los Angeles and they start actually doing all that.
Oh yeah.
My God. That's so cool.
My sources for this week and next are Hollywood Reporter, FacingHistory.org, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, Washington Post, Dead Rights Daily's blog, and History.com.
Amazing work as always, Ash.
Seriously, that was cool.
She put together a goddamn book report over here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, always.
You know, she warned us that the content was dense.
Dense like, narrative.
I don't even know what we're coming into.
Dude, so good. Well, I will say, we have some really rad stories coming up that, you know, Ashley's doing her deep dive research on. We'll do the part two for Warner Brothers. We have some really insane stories that we're going to be covering. And it's what you can usually expect. It's like pop culture that has moved the needle on culture through our lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what we tend to love because there is that shared thing with Disney.
These are literally his contemporaries.
Exactly. I mean, they knew each other. They were across the street from one another making similar movies. It's pretty cool.
Yep.
He's just the crazier person that went and started a place called Disneyland.
Right.
Warnerland. Warner Brothers Land. It's wild.
Yep.
All right. Do we have any recommendations?
Things of that nature? I definitely do.
Okay.
The other night, I picked a movie based on nothing except that it had Matt Damon in it.
He's good.
I love Matt Damon. And then I saw that Kristen Wiig was in it. And I was really?
I know what you're talking about.
And neither of them are the reason I love this movie. It was Hong Chau, who plays, good God, I'm not even going to try, a Vietnamese name. Ngoc Lan Tran? I just butchered that.
Sure.
Anyway, it's a movie called Downsizing from 2017. I have never heard a single thing about it.
Really?
It gets terrible ratings. I don't really know why. Maybe I just was in the mood to watch it. I thought it was pretty good. Right.
It was okay.
Me.
Yeah. We saw it in the theater, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's an Alexander Payne movie.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, it is. Yes.
Wild story.
Yeah. So
wild
it's
story.
Mild-mannered therapist Paul Safranek and his wife, Audrey, decide to undergo a process in which scientists shrink people down to miniature size to live in small communities. The irreversible procedure allows the people to gain wealth and a life of leisure while helping to cut down on the consumption of natural resources. And then I won't read the rest of it because it kind of gives stuff away. But
yeah,
it's adorable.
It's insane.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's like there's so much social commentary in it that is not necessarily like in your face.
And like, would you be willing to do something like that?
Right. For the greater good.
The greater good.
Would you be willing to do it knowing that you could still be in contact with people, but you can't actually be in their world?
No.
And your money gets you so much further there because everything is smaller and less product.
But then there's like the question, do you get to vote?
Right.
Because
you're not using
the things the same way.
Right.
And yeah, but it's like it happens really fast. And so they haven't actually had a chance to really work out all those details. And of course it's just like, what have we done?
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
But it's a really cute idea, and like there's just moments where I'm just like, they're so tiny. They're like 5 inches tall, fully formed human beings, 5 inches tall,
if that.
Living in basically dollhouses.
Yep.
And yeah,
it reminds me of the episode with The Simpsons.
Yes.
Where Lisa creates,
she has a tiny town.
Yeah, she has a little petri dish.
Yeah.
On a, I think it's a tooth, right?
Yeah.
And a little tiny town of beings appear.
She accidentally creates life.
Yeah, she actually creates life. That's, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what that would be like. Yeah, you would become an ant pretty quickly.
But it's crazy. It's different. Like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see them in a backyard. They are tiny amongst normal-sized things.
They're tiny amongst their tiny world.
In this, they're tiny in their tiny world, and so you can't tell that they're tiny unless they're, like, in comparison to something normal-sized.
Very weird.
It's a really funny idea, and it's the Vietnamese woman, her story, and she is just, oh my god, I fell in love with her. She is so great.
I'll definitely have to watch it again, because I remember thinking it's a good movie, but I don't remember it being great.
No, it's predictable.
But it was good.
It's not super, super, super well done. There's way too many holes for it to make any sense, really.
Sure.
So go into it like you're watching Dumb and Dumber, but it'll be way better than that.
Well, I would imagine that not knowing anything about it the way it was for you and just coming into it, that was probably pretty cool.
Yeah.
You're like, what is this?
I was literally just scrolling through Netflix and I was like, Matt Damon and Kristen Wiig, what?
Right. Yeah. Sometimes those are the best movie experiences.
And Christopher Waltz.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. He's the best.
I don't really remember his thing in it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay.
He's the rich upstairs neighbor.
He's great. God, he's good.
He's so good.
Jesus.
Yeah.
All right. Good pick. I'll have to check that one out again. So, as usual, guys, I have very strange YouTube
obsessions.
Right. It's been a long holiday break. Uh-huh. Now, lately, I'm into really three things, but I'm going to talk about two.
Okay.
Okay? We'll save the third for another time. The first one, I love weird sports, as you guys know.
Yes.
What was the sport I did last time?
I can't remember what it was called.
Can't remember the name of it at this point.
Jai Alai.
Hai Alai. Okay. Yes. This one is just two things thrown together.
Okay.
It's called chess boxing.
Wait, what?
That's exactly what it sounds like.
It's like soccer tennis.
Two assholes in a ring.
Uh-huh.
With a table in the middle, with a chess table in the middle. Two really good chess players. These are like rated, you know, top 20 in the world chess, like really good chess players. They have an opening to the game. They make some moves. Then I'll fast forward. Then they take a break. They get in their corner. They get the gear on. And then they box one another.
Okay, why?
Because it's chess boxing. So they...
Do they have anything to do with each other?
What do you mean?
Like the chess game and then the boxing match?
That's the thing I don't really... it's like a totality of points,
okay,
I think.
I gotcha.
Couldn't quite get it.
It's like you got to be a master of the mind and the body.
And yes. I think it's also just like, can you still... And then they go back to playing chess.
Oh, okay.
And they do that a few times.
So it's like, can you get beat in the face and then still make good moves?
Because they're like out of breath now. They got a bloody nose. And now they're trying to play chess.
Also, Sarah, just so you know how it works in this house, I've never heard of this before.
No,
that's right.
This is new to you.
This is all what I do in my own time.
This is James's personal time.
Yeah. And this is usually while she's sleeping. I'm in bed, just, it's just dark room with a light on my face. And this is what I'm doing. So that's the first thing, chess boxing. Check it out or don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
The second thing is a real fun one. This is a whole world that I'm getting into. It's called hood vlogs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what a hood vlog is? It's exactly what it sounds like. It is a vlog, which we know what that is, in a hood.
Like a neighborhood.
In a neighborhood.
But not so great neighborhood.
There's actually a channel called Hood Vlogs, and then there's a lot of people who kind of copied that thing. And that's the one you want to go to, okay? He's the top. And yeah, he started like 5 years ago. He's just some, I think he's like Puerto Rican or something, And he just goes around. He started in the LA area, like, you know, Compton, the Crips neighborhood of Compton. And then it's like the Bloods neighborhood. And he goes to Long Beach, Northside Long Beach Crips. And then now he goes all around the world.
Okay.
So it's like the hood of Paris.
What does this man look like? Like, is he a tall, skinny white guy?
No. Okay. He's like a Latino.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of like good. Urban looking Latino
guy. I'm very glad to hear
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At least he's not white.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. He looks like he could do a hood vlog.
Yes, he blends in.
Fit in
right
enough
away.
That you're not like, okay,
he's
who
got
is
the
flat brimmed
hat.
Weirdo?
Flat brimmed hat.
Yeah.
He's got a pit bull.
Okay.
He's that guy.
Great.
He just rolls right in and everyone.
Perfect.
But it's hysterical.
I don't know why it matters, but I needed
well, what
to
I
know.
What I love about it is like, yeah, I hear you. It's not just some like 5'9
I was
white
picturing
guy.
That. Really dorky, like boring white guy who's the travel guy. What's his name?
Oh,
Steve.
Rick Steves.
Rick Steves. That's who I was picturing
hood vlog
doing
guys,
some vlogs. And I don't know why.
We're in Watts right now.
And I'm going to have some cottage cheese.
Yeah, the Piru Bloods.
So what I love about it, though, is like, it's funny and cheeky, but it's also not funny and cheeky, and I don't want to make light of these people's situations.
Absolutely.
These are crime-ridden, poverty-stricken areas of our country.
Yes.
And that's what he's kind of shining a light on. And he actually has almost no commentary or narrative at all. He just camera on, and he'll say, "Hey, guys, we're here today, and my person that's showing me around is so-and-so." And then he just turns it over to that person, and they just walk around. Most of it is just people, it's the same video everywhere.
Right.
All these like gangbanger kids are all the same.
Uh-huh.
They all just talk. Like, yeah, yeah, what's up? And we're in blah, blah, blah right now. Yeah, this is the notorious whatever block. And you know that little Timmy, and they'll laugh.
Yeah.
And my cousin's serving a nickel right now, but that's good. That's how we are here. Blah, blah. It's the
they're not
same.
Actually saying
they're
anything.
They're saying nothing.
Yes. It's kind of like talking to teenagers.
Yeah. They just stand around and talk all day. But it is pretty crazy. Like one of the areas that really was eye-opening was a lot of the New York hoods.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Brooklyn and Queens and the Bronx.
Harlem. I stayed in Harlem.
It's crazy.
I stayed in an Airbnb in Harlem last year.
Well, we're
year,
West Coasters.
2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. Because they live in skyscrapers.
Yeah.
They live in really tall housing projects.
Without elevators a lot
without
of the time.
Elevators, really, really poor.
Yeah.
And it's rough, man. Uh-huh. It's fucking rough.
It is truly the city that never sleeps.
Yep.
I mean, at least where I was in Harlem, it wasn't quiet for a single moment of
Harlem's,
a 24-hour day.
Sarah, Harlem is especially crazy because it's in Manhattan.
Yeah.
It's at the very end of Manhattan.
Yep.
Whereas like Brooklyn and Queens, it's a kind of its own borough. It's still very urban.
Right.
And very, very city and dense. But no,
Harlem's bananas.
It's bananas.
And I fell in love with the neighborhood.
There's
I got
a lot
to
of
know the same people that
too.
I saw like every day and
didn't
actually have any real conversations with anybody. But
you recognize the pattern.
Totally.
The flow of the
and I felt safe.
Totally. Well, God, I remember staying in Brooklyn when I was young. I was like 17 or something with Tabana, the band I played in. And we stayed in Stefan's, the guitar player's aunt's loft in Brooklyn. And she has a lot of money. And it was a really nice spread, kind of a cool little neighborhood hipster. But you walk like two blocks away.
Yep.
Me and Robbie went to like a mini mart to get cigarettes or something. And as soon as, we turned the corner, I mean, we literally did the white suburban thing. We turned the corner.
Clutched your pearls.
We see a whole bunch of people that we're totally afraid of. You don't
fit into.
Yeah. And we just do a 180 and walk back. Like, nope. I guess we don't need that tonight.
Yeah.
We'll make do with what we got. Anyway, it's a fascinating world out there. Don't just think that where you live is the world. Because it's not the truth.
Totally.
Hood vlogs, get into it.
Chess boxing, get into it. Or don't.
Or don't. Probably don't, really.
Speaking of Alexander Payne, who did Downsizing, we just watched one of my favorite movies last night, Election.
Oh, oh that yeah.
It's also one of his.
Oh, dude. Yeah, it's a great
movie. I need to see that again.
It's so good.
That's Matthew Broderick, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great movie.
So I have two animal heroes of the week.
Okay, let's hear it.
The first up is Buddha Bennett.
Yeah.
The 17-year-old pit bull of Sarah's friend.
Kayla.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, tell us about him.
So Buddha turned 17 in July.
Wow.
He had some pretty severe neurological things going on.
17, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was still very much a dog.
Yeah.
He was very old, but they did decide they put him down a couple days ago. And Kayla is absolutely heartbroken because she's had him since she was, I believe, 17.
Jesus.
Maybe not 17, 20 something, early 20s.
Young person.
Yeah. And yeah. She told me a little bit about him. When she got him, he was 3 months old, and someone had just gotten him as a puppy and then moved and couldn't have a puppy in their apartment. So they like put it out. It was like a friend of a friend of a friend. And she heard that there was a 3 month old puppy that needed a home. And she's like, that is my dog. And the dog's name was Sweets. And the guy showed up with the dog, and she opened the door, and she was expecting this tiny little puppy. It was basically a full-grown pit bull that came charging past her, ran up 3 flights of stairs, and drank some Hennessy.
Nice.
And she immediately changed his name to Buddha, and he has been by her side for 17 and a half years.
Oh, God.
He's been there while she's been through everything.
Yeah.
And she's had a lot adult. Go on in her life. Sure. She has 2 kids now. They have never known a life without Buddha.
Aww.
And she said that she doesn't know how to be a person without him. So sending lots and lots of love to Kayla, and cheers to Buddha. You were awesome.
What a legend.
Yeah, truly.
And it gets better.
There are so many people who know Buddha too. Like,
right.
Yeah.
It's just, because he's been by her side for so long that there's tons of people who've made this connection with this dog.
Yeah.
And he was truly the best.
Kayla, I know how you feel if you're listening to this. Dexter was my Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knew and loved him. And
he's
with me for 16 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, they become family members.
Totally.
So here's to you.
The other animal hero of the week is Duke Ellington Morris.
I love it already.
Say hello to San Francisco Airport's newest therapy animal, 14-year-old cat Duke Ellington Morris.
Oh, I sent this to you.
Yes, you did.
That's right.
Oh, I love him. Yeah, he looks just like Benny.
He does look like Benny.
Yeah, he's very Benny.
But he's wearing a hat and a suit. from what I remember in the story I read about him, ever since he was like a year old, he's been working towards, you know, working as a therapy animal.
Yeah.
And now he's been hired on to be a therapy animal at San Francisco Airport. So I'm obviously trying to book something through San Francisco now.
Absolutely. And you have to have a mental breakdown and require a cat assistant.
Can do.
I know.
At the ready.
Can do. Like, Ashley, you seemed fine 10 minutes ago. You're like, no.
I'm not okay. I need a cat.
But what a good boy. He's a very, very good boy.
Duke Ellington
Morris.
Morris. Well, here's to you, bud. All right. I think we did it.
We did it.
In 2024, first episode.
Whoop, whoop.
Hit it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Disney Dependent.
See you real soon. Bam.
Bam.
You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Disney Dependent.
And you can send us an email at DisneyDependent@gmail.com.
This podcast is produced by Producer Ash.
The logo is by Ryan Hatch, and you can find him at WR Hatch on Instagram. The music is by Ryan Knowles, and you can find him at Ryan Allen Knowles on Instagram.
This show is mixed and edited by Deanna Chapman. You can find Deanna at Deanna_Chapman. And this has been a Team Dynamite Goat production. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll be back here next week.